Welcome to Linda's Corner. My name is Linda Bjork, and today we're going to be learning about energetic healing. I'm so excited to welcome special guest Damla Atakin. Damla is a healer, coach, writer, and the host of the podcast Conversation with Healers. I'll include a link to her website, A Drop of Om, in the description. Welcome, Damla. I'm so happy to be visiting with you today.
Me too. It's so great to be here.
I checked out your website and I watched one of your videos. And one of the things that I just really loved was your definition and description of a healer. That it's not only someone who practices and shares the healing arts, but also someone who, through their own journey of healing, just radiates light and healing for the people around them. And I thought that idea was so beautiful on so many levels. One is that it helps us to recognize what we bring to the table, that we affect the people around us, whether we bring joy or whether we bring sadness or anger or whatever, it affects the people around us. And I think it also gives us maybe a more of an obligation to heal ourselves because of the effect that we can have on other people.
Yes, we get to heal ourselves. We get to tend to our wounds. And I love that you're going from that entry point, because that's actually the essence of what I'm doing in my work. The name A Drop of Om symbolizes that you are a vibrational being, like a vibrational droplet in a sea of vibration, in a sea of omness. And your little vibration, your little drop makes all the difference, the way you tend to it, the way you nourish it, the way you feed it. And I'm a huge fan of daily healing practices that help you do that, including crystal healing, mantra work, affirmations, journaling. So we can dive in any direction. But what happens is we often tend to the needs of others around us and don't recognize that there are vibrational needs here. You as a person need to be heard, seen, and understood and loved. You as a person need to be listened to. And oftentimes as an adult, you can get helped with this for sure, but it's your responsibility to carve out that time during your day so you can be with what's here, whatever is rising up to the surface, and you get to be with that. You get to play with that, and you get to find the meaning and the wholeness that that moment is offering you.
I love that. And I love your attitude that we get to do this. This is a privilege. This is a gift. This is an opportunity to be able to do these things. And you talk about energetic healing, and I'm going to ask some questions about that a little bit later. But that's not where you started out. You talk about your personal healing journey of going through the mind and then working through the body and then finally settling on working through energy. And so would you mind just kind of briefly sharing your story and then help us to understand what energetic healing, what does that mean? What is it?
Absolutely. So my journey began, I didn't decide to be a healer. One day it was all an organic growth. But what I did was just through the natural progression of my life, I studied engineering and then I studied business, and I found myself in the business world, which up to that point and in the business world, I was working as a management consultant. It was very much mentally oriented, mind-based. And I was using all day, every day, my mental capabilities, which I was happy to do. But I came to a point in my life where I actually had a health crisis and discovered that that wasn't enough. That wasn't going to cut it anymore. Having all my energy concentrated up on my head wasn't helping my life force to be as full as it could be. So that health crisis actually led me to yoga. I started to practice yoga. That became my daily practice, daily exploration. And I eventually became a yoga teacher, switching careers from the corporate world into the yoga world. I became a yoga studio manager. I immersed myself completely in yoga. And then another life opportunity or crisis arose, the way you choose to see it. I became a mother in 2012. And it was a traumatic experience for me. It was an emergency C-section. It took me a long while to get back on feeling like myself. And in that turmoil, I realized that the mind-based strategies weren't working. The body-based life that I knew wasn't working because my body had changed so much through pregnancy and motherhood. And I began to explore other things. I began to discover that we're not just the body, we're not just the mind, but there's an energetic essence to us that permeates all of those, and then it's greater than all of those. So I began to experiment with crystal healing, sound healing, EFT tapping, mantras actually were my first entry point. And I discovered that these vibrational healing tools were not only helping, that was the first thing that kept me going. Practicing these things like crystal healing and mantras were giving me actual physical relief. But it also opened up in me this new way of thinking. Just as I was describing, I realized that I'm not just my skin. I don't end on my skin. I'm a vibrational, multidimensional being, and I'm connected to all life through that. And there's the physics of this. If you look at quantum physics, there's the electricity of this. If you look at the electrical universe theory, we're actually all connected through the electrical charge, the plasma in the universe. But what it comes down to is I changed how I looked at life, and then life changed for me. And then I began to share what was happening in my life and all the tools I was using that were making a difference in my life with others.
That is beautiful. And it's so fun to come from that angle of an engineer and then into this energetic kind of a healing where I'm not familiar with crystals. I'm familiar with a little bit of energy work. Would you mind describing? I don't know anything about it.
Of course. And I didn't either. And the time I stepped into crystal healing, I was a new mom. I had this much, very little sleep, if any, and very little time to devote to studying anything. But I went about it by just feeling my way into it. And in the little time that I could look at, you know, what is a crystal? What does this crystal do? Or, you know, how they work? I discovered that the information I was coming across was very person-oriented, meaning the person who wrote the book had a certain point of view, and then I would look at another book and they would have another point of view, which didn't give me a definition or an understanding of what I was experiencing, which was through the crystals, I was actually diving into a deeper vibrational realm. They were helping me discover my own vibrational reality through their vibrational structure, which I can now go back and tell you that was happening. So my approach was, instead of relying on someone else's experience, I decided to create my own experience and not have any labeling of saying this crystal only goes here, this crystal only does that. I was simply, I was playing. I was placing crystals on my body, like instinctively on my chakras or around me. And I was just noticing what was happening. And through this, what I discovered is that, first of all, there are a lot of books and information out there that classify crystals. And to me, that's the remnant of the Newtonian physics. We want to define things as physical. We want to label them as such, and we want to break them apart into their qualities. But here's the distinction or the difference of approach that I had. My point of thinking was, if I am a vibrational being, and if I encounter another vibrational being or a structure like you, Linda, I'm not going to ask you, what are you good for? What are your properties? What are you useful for me? And what is your chemical, structure? Just tell me your blood count. Wow. And then I'll make a decision on what to make of you. What I would do when I encounter a vibrational beingness like you, I would introduce myself. I would have you introduce yourself if you choose to. And then we would begin to have a conversation which could have a verbal element, but there's also, just like what we're doing right now, there's an energetic element that's going on. So I chose to approach the crystals the same way, with love, with respect, with the cultivation, with coming back to, with holding them with love, placing them on my body with love, with gentleness, and then taking the time to cultivate that loving connection, not asking them for anything specifically, but inviting them to co-create a new, a more expanded, a more delicious vibrational quality and beingness for both of us. So does this make sense?
Wow. Just a little bit. I feel like I'm just getting the tip of the iceberg. I don't know how to use them or how to do anything. You mentioned you putting them on chakras, and I'm not super familiar with chakras either. I'm a newbie, Damla. You gotta go from the basics here.
Exactly. And I was the same. I did know about chakras at the time, which is why I was drawn to them. But you don't have to know anything about chakras, which is actually one of the things I'm teaching. I have a mini free course on my website called Crystal Healing Myths. And there I'm teaching, you know, do you have to know everything there's to know about crystals or chakras or your energy field to benefit from crystal healing? Absolutely not. Do you need many crystals? No, you just need one, a single one crystal. And you probably have it as a pendant or as a ring already in your jewelry box. So just take it out, just look at it, hold it in your hand, and then begin to have, you can have a verbal conversation if you want. You can also have a conversation where, as the crystal is sitting in your hand, you can sort of dive into it within your mind. You can go travel inside it. You can let it show you what you may not have seen recently in yourself. So there's so much that you can do. But initially you can, actually that exercise, holding a crystal in your hand, and you imagine yourself just like a tiny little human being. And then you go and enter with permission. You ask for permission from the crystal. And then you go and enter inside the crystal. And then you just let yourself experience the colors, the structures, the shapes, and see these things. And I actually teach this exercise to kids. 5 to 8 year olds I used to teach this exercise to. And they would see amazing things inside. Sometimes we forget how to be just awed, how to be curious and amazed, just like a child would be. So what you experience with crystals, I don't think, in my experience, depends on necessarily what you do with them, but more on how you approach them. If you approach them from a place of gentleness, respect, and love, then your mind, your field, your body will already know where to go. And if you're really, truly a beginner, I do have an online course that you can take where I explain all of this, and it has 9 different guided crystal meditations that I love that allow for deeper and deeper and deeper healing. And the course is called Crystal Healing Simplified. But like I said, just get curious, get started, and then see where that takes you.
And this is what helped to heal you after your little one was born. Was it postpartum depression, or what were the issues you were dealing with? A physical, mental, emotional?
I never labeled it as such. It didn't, funnily enough, it didn't occur to me to label it. I can only describe it as this just deep darkness, place of deep darkness and exhaustion. And what I know now is that at the time, it wasn't just what was happening to me during that time, which was physically and mentally and emotionally, of course, a huge transformation and transition. But I now know that all my untended to wounding was coming up to the surface. So it wasn't just like what's happening right now with the pandemic. Anything you haven't tended to is going to come up to the surface. Which brings me to, you had asked this question, what are energetic wounds? We can dive into that a little bit if you like.
Perfect. But let's do that.
Absolutely. At the time, crystal healing was, together with mantras, what helped me gradually to, first of all, there was a decision. There was a point where I felt myself at the very bottom of the well. And I had the decision point was I was either going to let myself go down deeper or pick myself up and start to climb up. And I chose to pick myself up for me and the little life and the life around me. And after that decision, it was gradual. I couldn't tell you, I put crystals on me and then the next day I was healed. No, but I would come exhausted into my room and place crystals on myself and just stay with them for 10 minutes. And I would feel like I could breathe again. And then the next day, the same thing. The next day, the same thing. So absolutely, yes, they helped. And what helped even more than that was me coming back to a beloved practice that I knew was feeding my soul.
Excellent.
Yeah. So energetic wounds are anything that you experience that is not or has not been life-affirming or life-supporting, and they leave a mark in your body and in your energy field.
Okay. So that puts it kind of simply and yet still something to think about and kind of reach in. I liked how you talked about anything that has been unaddressed. And another thing that I noticed on your website was a class called Roots and Wings, Generational Healing. And I thought that was beautiful. And I've just been reading a book called It Didn't Start With You by Mark Wolin that talks about generational healing and generational traumas and healing. And you mentioned that we have to heal three layers. It is ourselves, our inner child, and our ancestors. Would you kind of explain that a little bit?
Yes. So the realization, mind you, this has been happening over the last 9 years and continues to happen. Every day I learn something new about energetic wounds. But when I had some time to digest some of what has been happening to me and combine it with my experience with working with others, I realized that whatever is happening in the moment, yes, it does bring a certain load into your life. And you do have needs in the moment, like you need to nourish yourself, eat something, drink something, all of that. But in the moment, depending on what moment you're in, there are also the needs of all the entirety of your inner children, not just the inner child. Every moment of your existence, past, parallel times and future exist here in the now. And if you believe in past lives, those exist here in the now as storage, stored information in your DNA, as well as all the moments and lived experiences of your elders. And I have a wider definition of your ancestors. I define them as elders, parallel lives, as well as future lives and future ancestors, if you will, your kids, grandkids, and so on. So all of those also live in your DNA. So at any particular moment, if there's a struggle, pain, or discomfort coming up to the surface, it's not just yours. It's tied intimately with all of these. And not only that, we have wounds of the species. We have wounds of the community. We have wounds of a particular country. We have wounds of all of life and cosmic celestial bodies, or I should say influences, if you will. So all of these live here in the moment. And your job is not to say, okay, this feeling of anger comes from here, comes from there. And you can dissect that. We can look at that all day long. If it's going to help you move through this, absolutely. But regardless of where the wound is coming from, it's here now. And it's your responsibility to help your system move through it with grace.
I like that. So when you're looking for it, you're not looking for a source to blame. You're just looking for recognizing that it exists so that you can take care of it and let it go.
Sometimes when you're dealing with something like a deep, deep wound, we get lost in the emotional burden of, like, why did this happen to me? Why is this here? Why is this not going away? Sometimes we have, because as people, look at us talking, look at us communicating. I do all my healing work online now. There are so many resources and tools available to us. And as a species and as women, we have so much more time than the previous generations. So there is a lot that is asking the people of now to be healed.
That's interesting. So back in the olden days where you had to wash your clothes by hand and you had to prepare all your food, each thing, that took a lot of time. And now, people spend time for money, but there is time that we can choose to either use for recreation or whatever, or we can choose to use that to learn and to grow and to help other people. So that's an interesting observation. Very, very true.
Yeah. And I'm not saying you don't have to necessarily spend hours and hours doing that. Just 5-10 minutes a day of just taking stock. Where am I imploding or exploding? What are the needs I haven't met today? How can I meet them? Is there a need? Is there a particular root that I'm not able to deal with myself? Then go and look for help from someone like me or someone you trust. So you don't have to do this alone. And you don't have to devote a lot of time to this, but recognize that tending to your needs and healing your wounds is a huge responsibility that you get to attend to.
Right. And like we talked at the beginning, as we work on healing ourselves, it has a radiating effect on helping the people around us. And that is effortless just by being around other people and with other people. If you're in a good place, it brings that healing and that peace to other people. I like that.
And people talk about purpose. We are, there's an obsession about purpose, but that could be just your purpose. I had a conversation with a psychologist in my podcast once, and she said, she does the inner work so that she can be a soft place to land for the people around her. That could be your whole purpose. So when you have the turmoil, when you're dealing with the wounding, you're not a soft place to land. Approaching you feels like approaching a war zone. But when you do the work, the healing, when you dedicate the time and the resources and the love, it's you. Whether you choose to do that or not for other people, as they approach you, they're not met with war. They're not met with that inner turmoil. They can feel the goodness and the coherence in you.
Wow, that's beautiful. So a soft place to land and just not to be at war. If we can get a whole society of people not at war inside, what beautiful peace that would bring.
Yes.
And I guess it can start with one, and one here and one there, and spreading to the people just around us. That's lovely. That's lovely. You made an earlier comment about how these things from generations are carried through our DNA. And again, I just been reading this book from Mark Wolin, that It Didn't Start With You, and he talks about epigenetics, that science, about how our previous understanding of DNA is kind of set in stone. It is what it is, and there's nothing you can do about it. And now they're learning about epigenetics, which is on top of DNA, and it is both malleable and inheritable. And that is so fascinating. It's a whole new idea of what we carry within us and what we have inherited and what we can pass on, it changes, and that we have the opportunity within ourselves to literally change our DNA to make ourselves be happier, to make ourselves be healthier, and to be able to pass on those good things to the generations that follow. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah. I would start with, how about allowing yourself to feel good? Just allowing yourself to feel good, recognizing that you deserve to feel good in this moment. And making time, and feeling good doesn't mean you just watch your Netflix show for 10 hours. You can. But feeling good means you have met your needs. Feeling good means you did the forgiveness work. Feeling good means you recognize there's a part of a wounded child in you that keeps coming up. And she's been coming up for a long time, and you haven't really tended to her. You've let your anger spill over. You've let your sadness spill over. How about you take the time to be with that child? So there's so many things you can do. But for me, a big turning point was realizing I can let myself feel good. And that comes into boundaries too. I can say no to something that doesn't feel good, and then say yes to something that feels good. And that could, just that practice alone could be what changes your genes and their expression, because our systems naturally know how to relax if we give them the opportunity, versus just forcing us to, you know, to keep improving ourselves versus allowing yourself to feel good.
That is amazing, that idea that we have to give ourselves permission to be joyful and give ourselves permission to be at peace. And you talked about just being, and so many times there's so much pressure to just move and do and do and do, and my value is dependent on my to-do list, and if I finished more objects and more items on my to-do list, then that means that I have more value, and if I ever stop to hold still, my value is gone. I have nothing because I wasn't doing my to-do list. And that idea that we can and even should stop and be, that we have value just by being.
And the question I would ask is, how many people do you see around you that looks like they allow feeling good? Not that many.
I know. I think they're worried about their to-do list.
Unfortunately, yeah. So when you shift your perspective, you would be doing yourself and them favor by just exemplifying it's okay to feel good. It's okay to feel good whichever season of your life you're in. You know, sometimes we are in a productive season, and sometimes life is delighted in our doing, so do that. Right. And then sometimes you're in a season of processing things and making meaning and making transformational work that is quieter, that is a lot less pompous, but has still so much value. And then in those times, just letting yourself realize whatever season you are in is good, and whatever resources you have are good. Whatever situation you find yourself in, there's always another learning, relating, connecting opportunity with yourself or others. There's always another resource that you can reach out to and begin exploring in this global internet world or anywhere, or just pick up a book that you're drawn to. It's another world. So just realizing there's a lot you can do with what you have and where you are in life. And it begins with finding that nectar. In fact, I'm working on a new, writing a new daily practice journal all about gratitude and all about realizing, I call them the nectar, just like a bee would go to a flower. And then there's that beautiful sweetness inside. We're drawn to it. And the wind carries its scent to us. Like, we have a sense of what that nectar is that lives around us. But oftentimes we're drawn to the shadows, or we haven't quite taken ourselves out into the sun. But the nectar still exists in you and around you, and finding time to notice that is really, really important.
Oh, that's beautiful. Just so many ideas of allowing, giving yourself permission and recognizing the beauty. And I think gratitude is an excellent way to help recognize the beauty. As a general rule, I think we find what we're looking for. And if we're feeling grateful and we're looking for things that are wonderful, they're out there and we're going to find them. That beautiful nectar of life that is there. And when we're not looking for it, we find the weeds and the dirt.
So there's a beautiful story of Persephone, which is a Greek goddess. She was the daughter of Demeter and Zeus. And she was looking for a flower. She loved flowers. She was looking for a flower in the midst of a beautiful field. And she was so beautiful. She didn't even know her own beauty. And she was drawn to this beautiful flower. And as she was about to reach this flower, this nectar, the ground opened up. And the underworld, Hades, was in love with Persephone. And she didn't want to go to him. So he broke open the earth and pulled Persephone down into the depths of darkness, into the underworld. And she was about to escape, but then she discovered a pomegranate. I make ceramic pomegranates. She discovered a pomegranate, and it said that she could have escaped, but she took one little pomegranate seed, one tiny seed, and she tasted it. And then she had to marry Hades, and that's a whole other story. But when she tasted that, it was as if she found another nectar in the depths of the darkness. So in the depths of the darkness, there was another beautiful fruit waiting for her. So then her mom negotiated a release, and she was going to be together with Hades for about one third of her time during winter time. And then she was allowed to go out and smell the flowers and get the other kind of nectar the rest of the time and meet her mom. So I think I'm careful of positioning gratitude as only the sunlight and flowers. There's a lot to be grateful for in the darkness as well. So it really depends on how you approach it. It really depends on what you're looking to find. And the same way Persephone was drawn to the beautiful sunlit flowers, she was drawn to the pomegranate seed in the very depths of the ground. So when you're struggling, when you're in the phase where your wounds are activated, there's something in you that's drawn to there because there's some kind of nectar for you in there as well.
That's amazing. I'm familiar with that story and the explanation of the seasons, but I have never heard it put in that that point of view before, of her finding the beauty and the goodness in the darkness. I'm going to have to ponder on that for a little while. That's a beautiful thought. We do have times of darkness in our lives, and I have learned important things from those experiences. Not that I wish for hard things, but I'm grateful for them because of how they've changed me and how they have made me a deeper person with more empathy and more understanding. And it makes it so that I have more to give I have more depth in me.
I love that because it's beautiful, because what you're describing is when Persephone came back out of depths of the earth, she wasn't the same Persephone. The flowers had more color. The nectar that she was smelling was deeper because she was so much under the earth where the smells and the sounds and the colors were suppressed. When she came out, she could actually sense and feel into everything a little bit more. And just like you were saying, she was discovering all these different layers to her existence that weren't just defined by the sunlit rainbow moments. She could hold all of that. And she actually became a very powerful goddess after that, very respected. But she could hold all the different layers of her being in the moment and appreciate all of them.
Wow, that is beautiful. Well, Dhamma, thank you so much for coming and for being here with me and for sharing your healing essence of your calmness and your beauty. I can feel it and I can see it, and it's lovely. And thank you for sharing it with others. I really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
In closing, I'd like to share a quote by Michael Jackson. He said, "If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and make a change." Today, I invite you to take a look at yourself and make a positive change, perhaps by allowing yourself to be joyful. See you next time on Linda's Corner.